I want to say, this is my day, no matter what age I am. As long as I'm on this earth, this is my day, and I want to live it as best I can. And so that's what sages are all about, and we look at how we can do that, how we can live most fully, how we can be most fully ourselves, and share the grace and the blessing of life with others around us. So I thought we could start this morning with this little poem, Tourist or Pilgrim, by Macrina Wiedekare. And I think maybe we'll just read it together in unison. So this is kind of a poem prayer to get us started on our topic for today. I stand at the edge of myself and wonder, where is home? Oh, where is the place where beauty will last? When will I be safe and where? My tourist heart is wearing me out. I am so tired of seeking for treasures that tarnished. How much longer, Lord? Oh, which was the way home? My luggage is heavy. It is weighing me down. I am hungry for the holy ground of home. Then suddenly, overpowering me with the truth, a voice within me gently says, there is a power in you, a truth in you that has not yet been tapped. You are blind with a blindness that is deep, for you have not loved the pilgrim in you yet. There is a road that runs straight through your heart. Walk on it. To be a pilgrim means to be on the move slowly, to notice your luggage becoming lighter, to seek for treasures that do not rust, to be comfortable with your heart's questions, to be moving toward the holy ground of home with empty hands and bare feet. And yet, you cannot reach that home until you have loved the pilgrim in you. One must be comfortable as a pilgrim before one's feet can touch the homeland. Do you want to go home? There is a road that runs straight through your heart. Walk on it. Any thoughts on that little poem prayer? Anything rise up in you as you were reading it? And I know there are some that might equate home with heaven, and so it sounds like maybe it's a poem about dying, but that's not how I hear it. I hear home as being whole, as being fully alive and fully present with God and with others. And just like when we talk about eternity or the eternal, I don't think that's just referring to something that's far off in the future, in a heaven far, far away, that someday I will fly away, if you know that song, you know, fly away home. I know everybody loves that song, but it bothers me because I don't think that's what heaven, and that's where heaven is. I think it's right here. And I don't think that we're always talking, when we talk about home, about dying or our next existence. I think there's a continuum of living. And I think that when we talk about going home, I think we're going into ourselves to discover and encounter and live through and out of our true wholeness, which we are meant to have as we are created in the image and likeness of God. And so we're meant to be whole, and we're meant to live at home. We're not meant to be feeling like we're strangers in a strange land. Although sometimes we do. And so that's what I hear in that poem, is not so much about when I die as it is right now. How can I have embraced my pilgrim journey so that I can become more and more whole more and more who I am created to be so that I can live at home with God. So that's my take on that poem. But I want to particularly notice the part in there that says about our luggage being heavy. And then as we embrace our pilgrim journey, our luggage getting lighter. And that's what we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks when we've been talking about harvesting our life story and doing life review. And we're going to get into that a little bit more today. But as we've talked about that harvesting of life and doing life review and looking at what's happened in our past and perhaps reframing that in a more positive way than we did when we were encountering it as a younger person, I think that's where we really come into noticing who we really are and what God has created us to be. And so that's what we've been doing. We've been trying to harvest the past so that we can live more fully in the future and in the present. You know, and that's all we've got, right, is our present moment. And so we want to be able to really embrace that. Are there questions about where we've been, or is there anything I can do? I know everybody has to miss a class here and there. I was just telling Al that I have to miss one in a couple of weeks. So what can I do to help everybody feel like they're on the same page with today? What can I do to help make us all together? Anything? Nancy?
Well, I think you hold so much together for me. And, you know, you talk about the life review. I'm doing that constantly these days.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's interesting how that happens.
Yeah, it is.
You hear about it when you're younger, and then all of a sudden you're
women. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we're thinking about those memories as luggage, especially the painful ones. The happy memories are kind of light and airy, and they're easy to carry. But many of us, maybe most or all of us, carry from the past some heavy baggage. Some of our suitcases are loaded down with the pain and the hurts and the betrayals that happened to us in the past. Most of us don't get through this life without some of that pain. I haven't ever met a person that didn't have a few harsh teachers along the way, a few painful memories. Some of us have more than others. Some of us have had a really tough go, and so we have a lot of those painful memories. So I would like to take us to begin through a little exercise. It's kind of a meditation. Some of you are probably love meditations. Some of you probably hate them. So we haven't done a lot of them. In fact, this is the first one. So bear with me. If you're not used to a meditation, it doesn't hurt. Nothing bad will happen. We just kind of want to be mindful and let ourselves relax into the moment. So I would invite you to get comfortable in your seat. If you have a lot of stuff in your hands that might be encumbering you from kind of just being present, you might want to put them down. If you should fall asleep, I don't want you to spill your coffee. I'd hope you won't fall asleep, but some of us, when we close our eyes, that's what happens. You know, my husband can sleep anywhere, and he closes his eyes, he's gone. So if that's you, you might want to put your coffee down. But just get comfortable. And if you're comfortable closing your eyes, I would invite you to do that. If not, if you want to focus on something in the room or on the floor or just kind of look ahead, do that. Soften your gaze. Close your eyes if that's comfortable. And just take a few deep, slow, rhythmic breaths. Try to still your mind, focusing on that breath. Breathing in, breathing out. Breathing in the love and grace and presence of God. Breathing out the anxieties, the worries, perhaps the hurry of the morning. And if you would, go back in your memory and imagine a difficult time in your life. Perhaps a time where there was turmoil, a time when there was hurt, betrayal, pain, some time that you would like to heal. Be aware if there's resistance within you to getting at that memory, and just note it without judgment. We build up protective walls against bad memories. So if there's a wall there and you're willing, let it come tumbling down for just a moment. And allow yourself to watch the scene of that time, of what happened. And remember that this is not happening now. This is just a scene like it was a movie that you're watching. It's not happening now. But just take a look at it. Look around at that scene. Notice where you are and who is there. Maybe the smells and the sounds of that moment. And see yourself as your younger self, who perhaps at that time felt alone or misunderstood or angry or hurt. And now let your present self, the you that you are now, with all your strength and all your awareness of life, walk into that scene and make contact with your younger self. Walk up to your younger self and maybe even hug your younger self. Reassure your younger self from this present. What is it that your younger self needs? Perhaps you will say something like, I come with assurance from the future. You're going to make it. You will live through this hard time. You'll be healed from it. And you will even learn an important lesson that will grow into wisdom. You did the best you could. And in the end, everything is going to work out all right. Is there anything else you need to say to your younger self? Say it now if there is. As your younger self feels the support and embrace of you, the elder, your younger self can now let go of the cramp around that pain. Allow yourself to reach into the pain and hug it and finally bless it. Maybe even offering the pain as a sacrifice along the path of your life, knowing that this too shall pass and will be a blessing for your future growth. And so let your present self bless your younger self. As you breathe out, let go of a layer of this burden from your past. Focus your attention on your breathing. You may become aware that you feel a little lighter now. Perhaps there's more energy. Maybe you feel a little more courage. But allow yourself to breathe in a sense of well-being and give thanks. And then come back out of that scene, back into this room, once again focusing on your breathing. And when you're ready, open your eyes and become aware of your surroundings. And just sit quietly for a moment or two and think about what just took place within you. Is there anyone who'd like to share anything about that experience? It can be deeply personal, and so maybe not. But if you have a thought or something you want to let people know happened or didn't happen, feel free. I would encourage you, if you would like, to think about that exercise perhaps when you get home. And if you're a person who journals, perhaps you might want to think about that scene that you just remembered and journal about what that was like, or perhaps the blessing that you received from revisiting it from a new perspective. Because that's what we said last week, right? The past happened and it's over, but we don't have to keep it stagnant. It is elastic. It isn't rigid. It isn't in stone. We can rethink it and re-see it and reshape it because we have new perspective and new understanding that we didn't have back then when it initially happened. And we know from first, you know, all the accounts from eyewitnesses that one of the reasons eyewitnesses are so unreliable is that everybody sees the same reality from their own perspective, right? So if I'm standing here looking at something in the middle of the room and you're sitting on either side of it and you look at it, we might describe it in very different ways, like the elephant. And didn't we start with the elephant back when, and the, you know, the blind men that all touch the elephant and they all see it in different ways? Well, that's what we do with our memories, even short-term memories about that, you know, car crash that we just saw or that we're all called to be witnesses for. We all see it differently. So the reality of our past may or may not be the reality of what happened. It's the reality of how we perceived that past experience through the lenses of our life story up to that point, and then all the memories afterwards. All of the ways that we chose to interpret that event, all the ways we chose to tell that story, which may have changed over time, right? But we have the ability now, as elders, as sages, to look back at those stories, take out that baggage that might be weighing us down and look at it in a new way. And that's kind of what we just did a little bit in that meditation, is to offer our younger self a new perspective, the perspective we've gained because we've lived all these years and we have the wisdom of all of that experience that we've had come to us. So we can take that old story and we can give it a new interpretation, a new meaning. I'm always reminded when I do this part of the presentation of the story of Joseph, the young son, the next to youngest son, right? And his father kind of favors him, remember? I think he was kind of spoiled. I think he was spoiled. I mean, he got the coat, and, you know, he got all. The older brothers really didn't like him, and I can't blame the older brothers. He was, you know, he was the fair-haired boy, and he got daddy's attention, and they didn't. So what'd they do to him when they got a chance, when they got him off by themselves one day? Anybody remember the story? What'd they do to, what did all the older brothers do to Joseph? They threw him in a pit, and then what'd they do? They sold him off. Yeah, they saw some Egyptians coming by, and they said, hey, we can make some money off this kid. He's been the problem all these years, you know. I know you never had a sibling who would ever want to do that to you. I was an only child, so I truly did not have a sibling that wanted to do that to me. But I have three children, and I think there were times when any one of them would very gladly have sold off one of their brothers or sisters to a traveling caravan and gotten rid of them. So I think that's a real story. You know, it may not have happened quite that way, but I think there's some real truth in those feelings. So off goes Joseph. And they're done with him. But their dad's pretty upset, huh? Of course, they tell him what a wolf got him or something, and he's dead. And so Jacob grieves and has lost this son of his. And then the famine hits, right? And the sons go off to Egypt to try to see if they can't get some food and survive this awful time. And lo and behold, Joseph has become this big muckety-muck in Egypt. And he's got the Pharaoh's ear, and he's, you know, all this, and a bag of chips, as we used to say. And he finds out that his brothers are there, and he has every opportunity to get back at them. Wow. Not many of us get that chance, right? To get back at the people that have done us harm. But he doesn't. He's lived a few years. He's grown in wisdom. And he looks back on this incident that was so horrific and so frightening. I mean, he went to prison. He was accused of doing things he didn't do. Any number of horrible things could have happened to him. Luckily, he could interpret dreams, and that saved his neck. But, you know, it didn't have to happen that way. And what is his response to his brothers when he sees them? Love. Forgiveness. Because he says, you meant this for harm, but now I see it differently. Because God can work good even out of the worst situations. And God worked good for me, even though you wanted it to be a painful memory for me. I'm going to reframe it. I'm going to reshape it. It's not going to be a painful memory. I'm not going to carry the baggage of hating you around with me for the rest of my life. I'm going to forgive you, and I'm going to let you be, and I'm even going to help you flourish because you did good to me even though you meant bad. Because look at all that's happened. Look at all I've learned. Look at all I've gained. Wouldn't have happened. I wouldn't be the person I am today. He doesn't say all this, but I think that's in his mind. Wouldn't be the person I am today if you hadn't done that. I'd still be the spoiled little brat living at home with daddy instead of learning to live on my own two feet, survive all this stuff, and be who I am today. And that's what we're talking about. That biblical story is an example of what we're talking about. Yes?
I think back to when I was 16 years old and discovered the Episcopal Church. And I had a wonderful priest, Father Peyton Spence Glenn, the little church in northeast Louisiana. And he taught me things about Christianity. I'd grown up all my life hearing all the stories, but they were just stories. And he taught me one thing. He said, every great theological principle is not about pie in the sky, by and by. It's about right now. Resurrection, redemption, heaven is all around you.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal is to take the scales off your eyes, mm-hmm. let go of the hurt, and mm-hmm. see the joy. Now, at 16, that was very gay.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it was like, oh, this is just a lovely thought, but I don't get it. And as I live, the one thing that echoes back to me, and as we did the meditation, I think back, there are all those moments that at one point I would have said, I would give anything for this cup to pass away.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want to deal with this. But when I look back from the perspective now, that's what's enabled me to learn to forgive others, to love others. And as I do my own little yearly journaling, I'm not real good at doing daily, but the anniversary of my confirmation, I usually sit and recount the year. And I look at all the things that have happened. And I have the column of what happened and what it gave me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's powerful, because you learn that this awful moment of anger or hurt or, as you said, betrayal resulted in my heart getting bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And viewing life as different. And we've all got in that a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Do we choose to see the awful moment that happened or the great redemptive gift that comes in that? Our own nailing to the cross and our own rising from the pain and the hurt. And all of that came flooding back to me in that meditation and in your recounting the story of Joseph, because mm-hmm. we are at once the father, we are at once mm-hmm. the brothers, mm-hmm. we are at once Joseph, we are once Pharaoh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, look at the gifts this man gave us. So, to me, that's the great gift of growing older, is the widening of our eyes, the perspective of vision. And you look at someone who's younger, and I get tickled because I look at my nephews and I go, your life is so full of drama
mm-hmm.
at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And one day you're going to step back and you're going to go, oh, this is a tired old tale. It's not as dramatic as it looks, but in it is a great gift and a great story.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to share that. I don't
great.
Know where it goes. But
that's great. Here. Thank you. Yeah. Anybody else? Yes.
I think the period is why I keep intense track and journal a lot. And I remember finding this, during the cleanup phase, we're getting more and more stuff away, either fifth or fifth or whatever. And in there I found one of these journals back about 15 years ago. And what was really funny was, as I read it, there was all this emotion about, I'm having this problem with this particular person. It was in business. And I don't understand what that problem is, but it's just really bothering me. So I had about two of those in about 10 pages. And the funny thing was, as I sat there and I thought, who the heck was that? And, you know, that obviously had been a pretty traumatic thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I thought, how many times, you know, as we get older, the other day someone, I asked them a question and they just went, you know, and at the moment I instantly reacted inside, boom, okay.
Uh-huh.
And I just walked, I said, oh, okay, and walked away. And later, I think one of the things we learned is detachment. That's what meditating is.
Yes.
And that
yes.
sense of, boy, she's had a problem or something else going on. So once I try and look at it from the other point of view, then it, suddenly all
mm-hmm.
those
mm-hmm.
big waves go away. And I thought, well, that was a waste of 10 minutes.
Yeah. But how much more quickly you're able to do that now than you were when you were younger, when you got caught up in the drama and felt the need to defend yourself or whatever in those situations. Yeah. Wisdom of age. Yes.
If you could kind of put yourself back many years, then you can address some of the issues that are maybe occurring with your own children, your own grandchildren, others that are nearby socially. Because I know recently I had someone who was kind of a next-gen type age group saying, you know, I'm working in a working hard, I've got a good job, but I don't see myself being able to earn as much as you guys have, you know. They're looking at our lifestyle and not seeing all the ups and downs in there.
Right.
And I remember going back and saying, okay, when I was your age, you know, I had this, this, and that. We're struggling with it. We had this instability, that instability. And suddenly you can just about see the wrinkles releasing from the other person's perspective.
Right.
It's the kind of thing that we have different time frames that we're measuring on. And it, if we can go back when we're talking to those that are kind of running around like a little puppy and we say, you know, rather than just saying, ah, we're going to dismiss you, if you can explain what you've gone through, it's not that they're doing the same thing, but it, it gives them a little different perspective to compare to.
The you that you are today is not the you you were when you were their age. You weren't living in the same house with the same income then as you are now. And so, you know, things take time, and young folks don't always recognize that there has to be some time.
Now it's just my wife and I, and the household that we're working at, and we're not looking at little children.
Right, you're not paying all those, all those expenses.
We're saying, okay, they're going to grow up, they're going to have college education, this expense, a house, a car, you know.
Right, right, yeah.
Trying to get it all into one little area with whatever their perception of now is. And not being able to accurately extrapolate to where they're going to be when that child needs a certain, you know, kind of is going to go to college or something else.
Yeah, and that is part of what we can do as older folks, is be that mentor that helps the younger generation see the future and understand that the their moment then is going to change. Yeah,
if
very good. If they will ask, yes, yes.
Because most of them think that we're just old folks and don't know anything.
Well, you have to disavow them of that. That's our job, is to say, no, I'm not. You will listen to me.
I think it's so funny. The one great perspective is when you're younger, you're spending all of your time collecting. But at a certain point, you're spending so much of your time getting rid of and thinning out. And that's such an interesting cycle.
It is. It is. And I don't know about you, but I'm finding that my kids don't want most of the things that I've thought I was saving for them. Yeah, so, you know, I might just as well get rid of them now, or they'll have to get rid of them later. So we talked last week at the very end, I suggested that maybe you spend a few minutes during the week thinking about who would be those teachers, harsh teachers, the big brothers of your life, who you might consider inviting to a testimonial dinner in your honor. And this does look back at the Psalm 23. Prepare a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. So this exercise invites you to consider who those people are that might come to that dinner party for you. Who were your harshest teachers? Like the lady that told me I couldn't sing back in the day, right? Like the person who I first married and then it didn't work out and we got a divorce, and the things that were said during that time, that person. The boss who didn't appreciate my hard work and, you know, fired me because of a misunderstanding and wouldn't listen to my side of the story. My dad, when he was drinking, and wasn't available to me as I needed him to be? Who are the harsh teachers? They may be people you love. Maybe people that you still love. That's okay. But they may have been hard on you. They may have been people who really didn't get it, didn't see you for you, or really used you in some way, betrayed you in some way, promised you something and then reneged, refused to see the beauty, the dignity that is you. Who would be those people for you? And I would invite you, if you have a pen, if you'd like to write them down, or just think about them for a minute. Who would they be? And why? The next column kind of asks you, what was it that they did or didn't do? And then what did you learn from that? Because we can learn even from our harshest teachers, we can benefit from them. We may not want to. I would like to be able to not have had some of those harsh teachers. It was too tough to go through some of what I had to go through, but I wouldn't be who I am today if I had not. I wouldn't choose to go through it again. I wouldn't say, you know, could you do that again so I can cry my eyes out for the next 3 weeks? No, I wouldn't do that. But I can at least see that I could bring good out of those difficult situations. And if I didn't bring a good out of it then, or haven't yet realized there was some good, maybe I can now. Maybe in doing this life review, maybe in thinking about these harsh teachers, maybe there is baggage. Maybe I haven't yet seen the benefit. Maybe it's a really small benefit, you know, and I got to dig pretty hard to even find it. But it might be there. And I don't say you have to forgive the person. This is not about forgiveness, although it could be. Okay, it could be that you want to forgive the person, but you may not. Because forgiveness really, or reconciliation, really is something that has to happen mutually. We can't reconcile with someone unless they're willing to reconcile with us. That's a kind of a mutual thing. And forgiveness does not mean that harm wasn't done. It doesn't mean that you just kind of say, oh, well, it didn't matter. It did matter. It was wrong. It was a bad thing. It mattered. It mattered to you. So we're not letting go of it in the sense of saying it didn't happen or it wasn't important. But we're letting go of any baggage that it causes in us. That weighted down feeling that keeps you from joy. The joy that is meant to be yours. I have come that you might have life and have it abundantly, Jesus says. We can't do that if we're weighted down with old hurts. And so we think about these harsh teachers, and maybe we forgive them, or at least we let go of whatever we have in ourselves that's weighing ourselves down. Because that person's probably long gone. Maybe they're even deceased. But in the case of some of my harsh teachers, they're still living, but they've probably totally forgotten about anything that happened between them and me. It's no big deal to them. They've probably done it to 20 other people between now and then, right? So it's not hurting them. The only person that's hurting from holding on to the pain or holding on to the anger is me. I'm the only one lugging it around. They're not. So forgiveness is both about letting it go, and also giving it to God, or just unburdening ourselves with it. Yeah.
One of the things I think of as I look at this is the person I might invite may be myself.
Sure.
At some point in my life, it was me.
Yeah.
Who was hurting or doing something harsh? The way I talk to myself, the way I view myself, and learning that through that I gained something that I had to grow, or it was going to harm me probably more than anybody else did.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so this exercise, and I invite you to take it home and work on it this week, bring it back if you are so inclined. But Reb Zalman, who wrote the book on saging, asks, what if you were to invite your enemies, those that inhabit inhabit your memories, your consciousness to a banquet dinner? What if you were to look at the events that made you see and feel them as enemies, but now from your wider sage perspective? And that's the question that we're being asked to contemplate here. And next week we'll do a little meditation on some of those folks in on your list. So if you bring the list with you or you just keep it in your mind, whatever, is fine. But that's what we want to do next week, is just kind of give them a little look and sit down to dinner with them. Maybe. Maybe we don't want to, but we will anyway. And I just want to share this little prayer with you. We're going to be talking more next week, obviously, about forgiveness and what it is and what it isn't. Because forgiveness is one of those things that we really have to do in order to truly sage. As we've said, we got to let it go. Lighten our baggage. And this is a little prayer. I believe Zalman wrote this as well. But we can read it as our close this morning, and then you can take it with you. And if it's something that is meaningful to you, you might want to repeat it. There are many words for God, and in this prayer, it refers to God as my eternal friend. Many ways to name God, ancient one, inner elder, eternal friend. Let's read it together, pray it together. You, my eternal friend, witness that I forgive anyone who hurt or upset me or who offended me, damaging my body, my property, my reputation, or people that I love, whether by accident or willfully, carelessly or purposely, with words, deeds, thoughts, or attitudes. I forgive every person. May no one be punished because of me. Help me, eternal friend, to keep from offending you and others. Help me to be thoughtful and not commit outrage by doing what is evil in your eyes. Whatever sins I have committed, blot out, please, in your abundant kindness, and spare me suffering or harm. Hear the words of my mouth, and may the meditations of my heart find acceptance before you, eternal friend, who protects and frees me. Amen. Pretty prayer. Mm-hmm. One that I have to say more than once, because I find I forgive the same person over and over and over again. And I love the part where it says, if you damaged people that I love, because I think sometimes people that we love, when they are hurt, we harbor the pain of that even longer than the person who was hurt. Because it hurts us. You know, if our child is hurt, I remember when my daughter was in fourth grade and she had this little friend, Kelly, a sweet girl, and then Kelly had a birthday party. And Katie thought Kelly was her very, very, very best friend, except she didn't invite her to the birthday party. And Katie was just devastated, came home bawling, and I was so upset for Katie. Her little heart was just broken. And you know, as a mom or a dad, how your heart breaks when your child or your loved one is hurt. And the next week, Katie came home and said, can Kelly come over and spend the night? I said, I thought we were mad at Kelly. She said, oh no, Mom, we made up. I said, I didn't. I didn't make up with her. I'm still mad at that kid. She hurt you. But I saw the wisdom in my daughter forgiving her, and so, yeah, she came and spent the night, and I was fine with her. But I wasn't ready to let go of that hurt. But my daughter was fine with it, and they were best friends again. You know, we hold on to pain sometimes for others that we don't need to hold on to, too.
Yes, yeah. Experience where we learned from our youngest daughter, when she's probably 10 years old, she had a best friend that lived down the street. And one day, her best friend came over and my daughter had a different friend that she was playing with, and the best friend got a little bit jealous.
Sure.
And got a little angry and threw a stone at my daughter and hit her. Then went off, and we said, "Well, shall we? You want us to talk to her mother?" And she says, "No." She says, "I'll take care of it." She didn't do anything. She just waited a few days. Then the other girl called up and said, "I'm sorry for what I did," and they became best friends again. It's just
right. You were ready to take her on.
Yeah, well, we're going to head in the old school. You know, you talk to the parent. The parent will discipline the child, and then they'll work it out. But
yep. Sometimes our children teach us, don't they? Yes. 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 So, testimonial dinner to those that have hurt, that have been tough on you, and imagine them around your table, and we'll get back to that next week. Thank you.